Harper, Aaron Maté. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. Again, our website is democracynow.org. You can go there for the images of today's broadcast, for video and audio podcasts, for the transcript of today's show. And you can also email us your suggestions, your comments, at mail, M-A-I-L, at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
And it's 6:01 p.m. on Tuesday, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. Water would be fine, thank you. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. I forgot my cough drops, I'm sorry. Scotch would be nice, actually. Thank you. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And yeah, you know, I caught a little something on the way back from overseas. But you know, it's fine. It's okay. I don't have a problem with this. I really don't. In fact, it's a perfect time to get sick, as far as I'm concerned. I think this was scheduled perfectly. Absolutely. I would not change a thing. And the reason for that is because, well, as everybody knows, if you get sick with something, then you're all the more likely not to get sick with something else after that. Yeah, it's one of these medical facts. So now everybody's running around screaming, going crazy over this bird flu that's supposedly on the way. I don't know how they know it's on the way. How do they know this is the year that bird flu is going to catch up to humans and drive all of us crazy? I don't know how they do these things. I really don't. So a couple of birds are laid up in bed with a fever and a cough. You know, somehow that's supposed to make us worry. But whatever, everyone's panicking. It's front page news everywhere you go. So the thing to do in a situation like that is to try and get sick with something else, because when you do that, you build up an immunity, a natural immunity to, you know, you don't get the flu twice in a row. You're not supposed to anyway. So if you get sick with something, you're not going to get sick with the same thing or something similar in a week or two. These are scientific facts. There's no room for debate on this. So by catching whatever it is I caught on the airplane, I feel that I'm ready for whatever is coming down the road insofar as bird flu or whatever. And because I like to help people, where's my water? Because I like to help people, I'll give you a few handy tips as well, so that you might enjoy the same good health that I'm enjoying. there are many ways that you can catch something that is not the bird flu now and therefore be safe. I don't think there's any limit to how many people can be sick at once. Someone once told me that there's some kind of natural limit placed on any particular species where no more than, say, 40% of them can be sick at the same time. I don't really believe that. I don't think that's true. And I have yet to see any scientific papers that claim that that is, in fact, the way it works. I could be wrong. I'm not a scientist. I don't claim to be one. But I am right most of the time. And a lot of scientists aren't. Okay, getting on to the handy tips. You can prevent getting sick by washing your hands, so that's the first thing to stop doing. All right, if you're in the habit of washing your hands several times a day, stop that. Don't wash your hands. Walk around. Be filthy dirty. In fact, being filthy is the natural state of being. It really is. All this washing and being clean and smelling nice, that's not normal. That's not what nature's all about. You see dogs going around washing themselves, you know, in soap and water? They don't do that. No animal does. It's something unnatural. And if you're looking to get something nice and quick, that's probably the best way to do it. Be sure to not cover your sneezes. All right, sneeze in people's faces, because that's sort of what I consider to be sharing. And you're doing it for the good of everybody around you, because do you want people to get bird flu? No, then get them sick now. And they won't. All right, when you feel a sneeze or cough coming, put away any tissues or put your hands in your pockets and just sneeze away. And try to sneeze in as many different directions as possible. There's no need to play favorites here. Be sure to touch your face as much as possible, because cold and flu viruses enter your body through the eyes, nose, and mouth. And in fact, I'm told that touching your face is one of the major ways that kids catch colds. So encourage your kids to constantly touch their faces and rub them in dirt first. That might help. I'm not really sure. Avoid fluids. Fluids tend to ward off sickness, so stay away from that as much as possible. I'm also told that saunas help prevent colds. I think there was a study in Germany way back where they found that people who took a sauna twice a week only got half as many colds as those who didn't. So, okay, right there, you know, saunas, bad. Do not take any saunas. Stay away from them. Otherwise, you're at risk for getting sick later instead of now. Avoid fresh air. Fresh air apparently is bad for colds as well. Avoid any kind of aerobic exercise. Same reason. You don't want to stay fit for this kind of thing coming down the road. Avoid any foods containing phytochemicals. Now, that's basically those dark green, red, and yellow vegetables and fruits. Avoid those. Very bad if you want to get some kind of a sickness quickly. Yogurt also. Avoid yogurt. That's causes nothing but problems for the people trying to get ill. Smoking, though. Smoke as much as you possibly can. I understand this is one of the quickest ways of contracting something. And it's also, you know, it's related to the whole theory of getting sick now so that you don't get sick later with something more serious. If you smoke a lot, all right, if you've been smoking all your life, and you really are scared that maybe, hey, I've done something bad, I'm going to get sick, I'm going to get lung cancer or something like that, no need to worry. Run out into the sun, all right? Don't put any sunblock on. Get a nice case of skin cancer. The skin cancer will ward off the lung cancer. Yeah, it's nature is amazing how these things work. Yeah, I know, I could do a health show on this station. It kind of hurts me that I've never been asked, because I've been giving out advice like this for years. And we don't have a true alternative type of health program, and I certainly think that we could use one. All you ever hear are all the ways of staying healthy. Well, you know, what if you don't want to stay healthy? You know, what if you want to get sick? No one ever talks about that. Alcohol consumption. Good idea. Consume alcohol, and basically what it does is it destroys the liver, and that's the body's primary filtering system. So germs of all kinds will be coming into your body and just being creative, you know, doing all sorts of interesting things. And finally, wherever possible, be tense and stressful. Relaxation is the number one enemy of sickness. If you relax, you might miss an opportunity. So hopefully these little hints will be of use to you and prevent you from getting the bird flu, which I understand is on its way. It's really amazing, isn't it, how these poor little birds are being blamed for everything that goes wrong. But I guess that's the nature of us not wanting to blame anything on ourselves. Okay, the health section of our program is over. And, of course, I'm still sick as a dog. I don't know where that phrase came from either. Dogs aren't usually sick, but I guess that's just something we like to say as well. Yeah, so I got back from Europe last Thursday. Had a great time, except for contracting whatever it is I contracted. I actually didn't start feeling it till Saturday, so I wasn't aware that I had anything, except, you know, little minor hints. And, yeah, I kind of thought that was jet lag, or whatever it is you get when you head back west. But as the days went by, you know, you go through all these different phases, and I'm not going to get into the details because some of them are kind of disgusting, but I think it's on the way out. I really do. My God, I wonder how many letters I'm going to get from outraged parents who have really dumb kids who follow my advice. Or just really dumb people who follow my advice and survive and write in later. Well, if you want to write in with your objections or outrage or complaints, it has to be negative, though. Positive mail is just, come on already. Enough. Enough with the praise. Enough with, you know, all the nice words. No, they're nice, too. Send whatever you feel like. otw@2600.com. That is our mailing address. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we've been hearing from you throughout the shows that we've been doing on the road. Last 2 weeks have been in various interesting places. The first week was on an airplane. The second week was, oh boy, in the middle of Amsterdam on New Year's Eve. And what a show that was. Has to be the noisiest program I think I've ever done anywhere. And I think it's noisier than a sporting event. And in fact, on that subject, there's a sporting event coming up tonight. Yeah, another abbreviated show. We had one last week, another one this week. Last week, I think it was the women's basketball, and this week it's the men's basketball. So we're going to be we. Why am I saying we? I'm not part of the team. Yeah, I was part of the school once, but even when I was part of the school, I wasn't part of the team. And even if I was part of the team, I wouldn't feel like I belonged, you know? This whole we business. Oh, we're going to win the World Series this year. Who's we? You and a bunch of your friends from the bar? No, the Mets, the Yankees. Come on. Do they refer to you as a collective? You know? Your little triumphs in life, is that something they take pride in? No, they're making millions of dollars a minute. They don't care. And why? Why do you have allegiance to a team anyway? All the players come, I'm not talking about Stony Brook here, because obviously they're students here, but, you know, for professional teams, they don't even come from the area. I think that should be a rule. I think players in major league teams should live in the area. They should have been brought up in the area. But your parents moved when you were six? Too bad. You no longer qualify. New York Mets should be made up of people who grew up in New York, who lived in New York, and who will never leave New York. And that way there's some actual geographic pride. And the same thing for national teams, whether they be soccer teams or baseball teams or what have you. Yeah. And then, you know, when you get into the fights, when you get into the riots between various teams and playoffs and various things like that, it's based on something more than just the name of the team. It's based on true hatred between one city and another, or one country and another. With luck, a war could start. And that's, you know, what sports is supposedly the substitute for. Can you imagine if armies traded players? Well, we're sick of this guy. We're going to trade him to the Iraqis, you know, and for a bunch of people coming in 5 years. No, it doesn't work. Everybody knows it doesn't work. You can't have true allegiance to a city if you don't live there. And then maybe, when we instill these new rules. Instill? Is that the right word to use? The brain is the first thing to go. When these new rules get started, then maybe we can say we when the Mets win the World Series. Of course, that'll never happen. Why was I talking about this exactly? The fever, yes. Because, yes, there's a men's basketball game tonight, and I was saying we are going to be in Dartmouth, or the team is going to be in Dartmouth, I believe. So we'll see if we get our asses kicked up there or if we come home with some kind of cup or something. So, yeah, we're only going to be on for 45 minutes tonight, as we were last week. But I understand that's it for a while. Unless somebody does something stupid and wins a championship or something and we have to broadcast all these other games. That's quite possible, I suppose. And I just got word, actually, right before coming in here, that it's very, very likely, 90% plus chance, that the Off the Hook is going to be preempted tomorrow because of the Alito hearings. Now, who's this Alito character, you might ask? All right, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to use that as a smooth way to lead into the news. Oh, excuse me. So much for the smooth way of leading into the news. He has 15 years of rulings on an appeals court, and that's providing the ammunition for senators questioning Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito at his confirmation hearing. So now you know who he is. And it's well worth listening to. I'm not at all upset if we're being preempted by this, because it's the only radio station carrying it, and that's an important thing. And the next person on the Supreme Court could very well do all kinds of nasty things, you know, like overturn Roe versus Wade, give his approval to torturing people or holding people at Guantanamo Bay forever, including Americans. Yeah, we live in very perilous times. Things are changing. Things are getting awfully weird out there. So it's good to pay attention to anything that affects that in some way, whether it's the latest scandal affecting the Bush administration or the newest Supreme Court nominee. So pay attention if you happen to be listening for Off the Hook and hear Supreme Court hearings instead. Anyway, continuing with this story, he's defended his vote in support of a law that would have required women seeking an abortion to notify their husband. And he's defended his support of police who strip-searched a 10-year-old girl in the home of a drug dealer. Interesting character here. When Democrat Edward Kennedy, you know, the only time you ever see Edward Kennedy is when he's grilling somebody. You notice that? The guy never does anything except ask questions in hearings. It's the only time I ever see him, and every time I see him, he looks older and whiter. Anyway, he suggested that Alito always seems to side with the government against individuals claiming their rights were violated. Alito disagreed. He says he handles every such case on its merits, and that no individual has ever had any merits against the government. He said that no president and no court is above the law, even in times of war. Well, I wonder how he would view what Bush is doing right now. And, you know, in typical fashion, typical wimpy Democrat fashion, the next question was not so. Should Bush be held accountable for not obeying the law, for going above the law, for spying on American citizens using the NSA, for lying about it. Huh, Sam? What do you think about that? But no, they won't ask those kinds of questions. That's a little too sensitive. Alito vowed to keep an open mind on the issue of abortion. Why are we still even talking about abortion? Good Lord. Roe versus Wade was back in the 70s, you know? Aren't there more important things to talk about right now? Can't we just move on? Look at the whole rest of the world. Are we really going to go back to, what, the 18th century or something in our way of thinking? Yeah, we probably will. It's pathetic. Alito was questioned about a memo he wrote for the Reagan administration Justice Department on how to chip away at abortion rights. That's not a good sign, is it? He says he was writing as an attorney on behalf of his client and not as a judge. Translation? He'll do the bidding of the highest... No, he'll do the work. I'm sorry, I messed up the line. He'll do the work of the highest bidder. That's the translation. All right, so that's going on right now, even, as we air. But if you're listening to this program later, go check out a news site somewhere. Go listen to some audio. Go watch a C-SPAN rebroadcast or something. Okay, Bush is warning Democratic critics to watch what they say on Iraq. Oh, boy. Yes, watch what you say, because you might give comfort to America's enemies. Oh, boy, here we go again. You're either with us or against us. Speaking to a veterans audience in Washington, the president looked ahead to this year's congressional elections, saying, voters will hold to account those who air irresponsible charges or defeatist rhetoric. Irresponsible and defeatist. He says America also owes the Iraqi people an example of what responsible debate in a democracy looks like. Responsible debate, I guess. My way or the highway. Of course, Democrats were quick to respond that it's Bush who should be held accountable. Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid says U.S. troops and their families deserve answers to tough questions. He says Bush shouldn't be afraid of an open election year debate. What will it take to have a hearing where he is the subject? And he's asked all the tough questions. And he doesn't have somebody by his side to tell him the answers. That would be something. Bush was speaking in the same room in a Washington hotel where last month he described the effort to reconstruct Iraq before a skeptical audience, the Council on Foreign Relations, whose members greeted him with only tepid applause. But today, he learned from his mistake. He spoke in front of the veterans of foreign wars, and they interrupted him repeatedly with applause. What can you say about someone who is so unsure of himself that he has to speak only in front of soldiers? People who are guaranteed to applaud what he says. People who are probably ordered to applaud at what he says. Bush acknowledged major human rights abuses by the Iraqi police. Yeah, not by American forces, by the Iraqi police. It's all their fault. He said they have been accused of committing abuses against Iraqi civilians. That's unacceptable, he said. He also said the vast majority of Iraqis prefer freedom with intermittent power to life. Wait a minute. I'm sorry, I messed that one up too. The vast majority of Iraqis prefer freedom with intermittent power to life in the permanent darkness of tyranny and terror. Those were the two choices on the Gallup poll that everyone was mailed over there. Freedom with intermittent power or life in the permanent darkness of tyranny and terror. Which would you choose? Bush also pressed countries that have promised aid to Iraq to make good on their pledges. He praised Slovakia and Malta. Oh, Lord. For forgiving all of Iraq's previous debts to those countries. How much could they possibly be in debt to Malta? To Slovakia. Slovakia! Not Slovenia. Slovakia. Slovenia was the richest part of Yugoslavia. Slovakia was the poorest part of Czechoslovakia. So how much could they possibly be in debt to countries like this. I mean, he's picking the countries that have forgiven these debts. But it was Mr. Bush's warning to Democrats that ventured into new territory. There's a difference between responsible and irresponsible debate, and it's even more important to conduct this debate responsibly when American troops are risking their lives overseas. And he finished by saying, a country that divides into factions and dwells on old grievances cannot move forward and risks sliding back into tyranny. Was he talking about us, or was he talking about them? I'm not even sure. Anyway, so that's the cheerful news as far as that goes. It is kind of funny, I gotta say, but good lord. Okay, bit of fun here. A bomb was defused in a Starbucks bathroom. Not really a bit of fun, but kind of interesting how the stories are being reported. There was a Starbucks in San Francisco yesterday. All right, you know, I'm just gonna read it the way they wrote it in the San Jose Mercury News, because it's really kind of funny. Patrons at a Starbucks in San Francisco almost got an afternoon jolt Monday. Yeah, you know, that's a nice way to approach a serious subject. Throw in a coffee reference. Police defused a makeshift bomb in the bathroom without causing any harm. At about 1:15 p.m., an employee at the store at 1401 Van Ness Avenue found a suspicious device in the unisex bathroom and called police. Well, you know, I don't know about these things. I've never been in a Starbucks in my life. It's true. I might have said this before, and it's not something that I really thought much about until one day, several years ago, I suddenly realized, you know, I've never been in a Starbucks. And then, at that point, I said to myself, well, why not see how long I could continue doing this for? You know, imagine the respect I would get if I told people I've never been inside a McDonald's, ever. I could write my own checks. Well, actually, I can do that now. But the point is, when something like this happens, it's kind of unusual. You try to stick to it. See if you can survive. It's like, you know, being a vegetarian or something. We might as well continue doing it. Something to be proud of. So I'm proud of not ever being to a Starbucks. Now, I've had the product. I've had their coffee and various other things that people go in and get for me sometimes. So that's not the issue. It's just I've never actually walked into a place that calls itself a Starbucks. I don't count the Barnes & Noble cafes that are called Starbucks cafes because they're in Barnes & Nobles, and I think that supersedes the Starbucks moniker. I've consulted with a lawyer about that, too, so I think I'm on firm ground. But I've never actually been inside a place that is a Starbucks. I know, it's not a big deal, but it's something. You know, you have to grasp at whatever you can grasp at. And I said, too, also, I'll go inside a Starbucks someday. I will. I'm not obstinate about these things, but you know what? I'll go inside a Starbucks. How about this? I'll go inside a Starbucks after I go to North Korea, and after I go to Cuba. Okay, those two things right there, Cuba and North Korea. All right? Two places I'm not supposed to go. Two places that are evil, part of the axis of evil, in fact. I'm not allowed to go to Cuba. I'm not supposed to go to North Korea. They don't allow Americans in. And we don't allow Americans to go to Cuba. So, you know what? Fix that. Then I'll go inside a Starbucks. All right? That's fair. Okay, so as the Starbucks Corporation scrambles to change the law so I can actually walk inside one of their stores, let me continue with this story. When the bomb squad unit arrived, officers determined the device was an explosive and evacuated nearly 100 people from the coffee shop and a multi-unit apartment complex above it. The device was disabled an hour later, according to San Francisco Police Sergeant Neville Gittins, who said if it had gone off, it could have caused serious damage and injury. Now, that kind of a quote right there, you know. Okay, it's an explosive device. If it went off, it could have caused damage and serious injury. What does that mean exactly? I mean, yeah, you know, if you're looking straight at it and it goes off in your face, it's going to cause injury no matter how mild it is. A firecracker can do that. How powerful was this thing? They don't actually say. and they refuse actually to disclose the size or type of device found, its potential explosive capacity. But they say we have some very active leads that we're following up. The Seattle-based Starbucks firm also declined to provide further details. This random person who was reading news, they really went all out on this story. This guy was reading news on his laptop at another San Francisco Starbucks on Market Street near Stockton Street. So they tracked this guy down and they asked him some questions. He said he hadn't heard about the bomb, but for some reason they thought it was still interesting to talk to the guy. So he went on. "That's a really strange location for a bomb," he said. "It sounds to me like it was more of a personal attack." "Maybe so, but how in God's name do you know? You didn't even know it was there. Just because you're sitting in a Starbucks on a laptop?" I don't know. Oh my God, they have more quotes from the guy. He said he did not know how he would react if someone found a pipe bomb near where he was. My God, well, what do you have to be a reporter these days? How would you react if there was a pipe bomb next to you? What would you do? Think about it. Well, this guy didn't know how he would react, but he guessed he would panic. "I am not very brave," he said. I would probably look for a way to... Can't do this. This is insane. Who writes these newspapers anyway? Elementary school kids? It took two people to write this article. Sandra Gonzalez and Teresa Paletti. My goodness. Let's continue. "I would probably look for a way to get out really fast. I think this is not good news for Starbucks." And then, on top of everything else, as if you're not on the floor laughing your guts out at reading this nonsense already, they throw in this little factoid at the end. "Vandals have previously targeted the chain's San Francisco stores. In 2003, police said the windows of 17 Starbucks were clouded with glue and some of the door locks were jammed. The vandals also posted phony notices, purportedly from Starbucks management, announcing the company's intention to abandon some of its San Francisco stores to make room for more locally owned coffee houses." What in God's name does that have to do with somebody planting a bomb inside a store? Someone issuing fake memos and doing petty vandalism is hardly the same thing. But apparently, anybody who criticizes Starbucks or does anything against them is pertinent to this story. It's like when they had the web demonstrations, the World Economic Forum, a couple of years ago here in New York. They had a police car in front of every single Starbucks in Manhattan. There's a lot of Starbucks in Manhattan. And every single one had a police guard during the entire conference. It took place over, I think, 3 days. And there were a lot of demonstrations against the conference. I don't think there was a single demonstration against Starbucks, but the reason they did that was because back in 1999 in Seattle, during that infamous World Trade Organization protest that took place, where the police reacted incredibly severely against a rather small number of protesters, somebody somewhere threw a stone at a Starbucks window and broke it. Yeah, and so that, from that point on, anytime there's a demonstration involving anti-globalization people, well, Starbucks must be a target, so we have to go crazy and protect every single Starbucks. It's really, it boggles the imagination how they think, how they figure these things out. So yeah, that's what I mean by a bit of fun out of San Francisco. And what else is going on? Some good news, in addition to the NSA probing our phone calls without warrants at the behest of President Bush, now U.S. officials are opening personal mail that arrives from abroad when they deem it necessary to protect the country from terrorism. That's according to a Customs and Border Protection spokeswoman who said this yesterday. News of the little-known practice follows revelations that the government approved eavesdropping on U.S. citizens without judicial oversight. It's incredible, isn't it? They stop at nothing. When they deem it necessary to protect the country from terrorism, that could be anything. When they deem it necessary, that pretty much lets you get away with anything. Well, we deemed it necessary, but we were wrong. But we still deemed it necessary. The unidentified spokeswoman said, one of our areas of responsibility is to inspect international mail coming into our country. We respect privacy. No, you don't. No, you don't respect privacy. If you're opening people's mail, you don't respect privacy. Good Lord. We respect privacy and always keep that at the forefront. What exactly does that mean? While we're opening the mail, we're thinking about how we're violating these people's rights. It's at the forefront. What a load of nonsense. At the same time, though, we need to make sure we do our job in keeping U.S. citizens safe. Yeah. Grant Goodman, an 81-year-old retired history professor, drew attention to the policy after a letter he received from a colleague in the Philippines was opened and resealed by Customs and Border Protection and only then sent on to him. He said he was shocked and amazed at the letter, which he received last month from another retired history professor with whom he has corresponded for 50 years, had been screened. It was a big surprise, he said. The public should know that this is being done. Nobody whom I know had any idea this was going on, and as far as I know, it's never been announced. It's never been revealed that this is being done. Well, Grant Goodman's going to have some trouble getting on airplanes from now on, I'll bet. And by the way, I had no trouble at all getting on airplanes this whole trip. It was the smoothest I think I have ever seen it. And especially in Amsterdam, in Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. In the past, I've gone through three separate security screens. Basically, what you do is you go to passport control. That's where you show the people your passport and tell them where you've been. Show them your ticket, I think, too. And then what used to happen was you'd go through security right after that. And then you'd round the corner, and there'd be another security checkpoint. And then when you got to your gate, there'd be a third and final one. Well, guess what? This time, there was only one at the gate. You could walk all the way up to the gate. And when you got there, you had to go through security. And that makes sense. That makes perfect sense, because if you're going to pick something up along the way, well, the last thing you're going to go through is your gate. And this also allows people to go with you, hang out for longer. Makes travel a lot less stressful. And the people there were just very, very nice and friendly. You know, asked us where we had been, what kinds of things we did. In a friendly way, though. And obviously they were doing their job. Obviously they were looking at us, making sure that we weren't sweating too much or casting sidelong glances at the explosives strapped to us or anything like that. But it was a genuinely friendly conversation, and I felt very relaxed. And it was just as secure as all the nonsense. In fact, more so. People yelling at you, telling you to take certain items off, and just making you feel very tense and nervous, and then wondering why you're tense and nervous. So, yeah, it's interesting traveling these days. You can either go through something very smoothly or something very crazily, depending on, I guess, what the policy is at the moment. I'm always surprised when it goes smoothly. All right, we're almost out of time. I can't believe time's going so fast. Time flies when you're sick. Yeah, and I got in the whole studio contaminated, too. Don't bother thanking me. The least I can do for this place. It's done so much for me. If I can prevent people from getting bird flu later on, it's well worth it. But let's listen to... Let's listen to me read some pieces of email that we've received. And you can maybe listen to yourself being read. Does that make any sense either? Boy, when you're kind of like in a haze, you know, a feverish haze, you start saying all these crazy mouth words. You know, and things just sort of, you sort of create your own language. It's kind of cool. Dear Emmanuel, I was just catching up with your program from New Year's in Amsterdam. Coincidentally, I was in Amsterdam, East Amsterdam, watching the exact same thing you were, only I was video blogging it. Oh boy, video blogging, huh? Anyway, you and Redbird mentioned the iRiver that you use. I wanted to point out that the new line iRiver has released flash players, actually. I'm not quite sure how you meant to say this, but basically you're saying that it's not as good as the old ones. The new ones don't have a line in, while the old ones do. They no longer have as many options for sound quality and bitrate. I think iRiver was actually receiving pressure from the recording industry to dumb down the quality of their recorders because they were so good for recording live events. I wouldn't be surprised. Certainly wouldn't be the first time. Similar things happened long ago with the iPod, where the maximum quality they allow it to record with is pretty bad. 80 kbps. They could have made it better, but were discouraged in the same way iRiver has been. Anything to keep people from producing their own good quality content, it seems. Anyway, keep up the good work. Oh no, keep up the great work, I'm sorry. And please, next time you're heading to Amsterdam, announce it a week or two beforehand. It would be a great moment to meet you in person and say hello. Signed, Bicycle Mark. Actually, I think everybody in Amsterdam has bicycle in front of their name because everybody rides bicycles. It's incredible. But thank you, Bicycle Mark, for that those nice words. And for those of you out there, if you have not listened to last week's show yet, well, just be warned that it's a noisy one. It's pretty loud. All right. Oh, is our time almost up already? All right. Well, I'd like to read one more piece of mail, if that's possible. Okay? All right, I'm going to do that. I heard of your radio shows several months back and subscribed to them as podcasts. I have limited time and have only been able to listen to pieces of each show. That's okay. Sometimes we only have time to do pieces. I have yet figured out what the shows are actually about. I have yet figured out what the shows are actually about? You've got a fever too, don't you? The pieces that I have heard seem to deal mainly with the hosts catching up with each other and just chatting. The hosts, plural, right? Okay. I went to the website. I don't mean to, you know, nitpick here. But I'm trying to understand. I went to the website to see if I could find a description of what the shows were about. Maybe I will be more interested in Off the Hook, etc. Maybe, but I wouldn't count on tomorrow. But found nothing on the site describing what the shows were about, just when they aired and where you can get them. Could you briefly explain to me what the difference are? I'm sorry, I'm just reading it the way it's written. Between the shows and what it is they are about in general. Signed, Dan. Well, Dan, you know, I appreciate the question and all, but how do we describe what we are? It's like me replying to you and saying, can you describe what you mean? Or, you know, who you are or something. You can't really describe something in black and white. The best way for you to understand what this program is about and what it's not about is simply to listen. Yeah, I know, it sounds like a cop-out, and you know what? It is. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the basketball game. Have a good night.
Sometimes the twists and turns that life takes steals the joy from your life, and sometimes it helps to talk. Let the response hotline help you find hope again. Call 751-7500 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 751-7500.
Is Daddy coming today?
No, honey.
When Michael's father left 2 years ago, he intended to keep seeing his son. But things happened.
Will he come today?
No, honey.
Michael will be twice as likely to drop out of high school, twice as likely to use a knife or gun in a fight. You may think if you don't see your children, your influence on them is over. But you influence them in ways you may not think of. In fact, a child without a father is 63% more likely to run away, 37% more likely to abuse drugs, twice as likely to end up in jail.
Will he come today?
And 30% more likely to attempt suicide. It's hard to stay close to your kids when you don't live with them, but you can do it. Give them a better chance. Give them the emotional and financial support they need. They're your kids. Be their dad. A public service message brought to you by the Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Everybody, and welcome to Stony Brook Seawolves basketball. Tonight it is the men visiting Dartmouth, and Ray Alexander is there with the call.
And welcome